I went over and beginning a visit with Shirley this Tuesday morning, the 18th of September, 73. Channel 1 over and beginning a visit with Shirley this Tuesday morning, the 18th of September, 73. Channel 1 over and beginning a visit with Shirley this Tuesday morning, the 18th of September, 73. Channel 1 over, beginning the visit with Shirley this Tuesday morning, the 18th of September, 73.
Well, Faye, I'm going to tell you, because I'm a poor one that watches the time. Would you run me off from here about, let's see, I have to meet Berman at 12 o'clock on University Avenue.
We'll try to get you off in time to get there. Right.
I'll get talking and forget to go.
12 o'clock, that's a long way from now.
He'll be looking for me. I put on a couple of loads of clothes, and I happened to go back in and look at the time. And go, oh boy, it's time for me to go. You know, I told Mr. Miles it'd be over in about an hour. So I left some floors and the beds I made, but I got my clothes out anyway.
You been doing something with a pencil?
Yeah, I had a lady call me. She wants to use my collie as a stud, so she wanted me to write down her phone number. I told her I didn't have time to talk to her this morning. I wrote down her phone number, and I'm always sticking this pin behind my ear.
Is that too much on you, that fan?
No, I sleep with one on me, and I think that's a mistake with arthritis. But I can't do without them. I carry the fan everywhere I go. I'm in the kitchen.
Somebody come back here. This car don't look like anything that's been in here.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? Gee, you're cold.
You know, last night was the first.
Nice and nippy, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I left the bedroom window. I still have a fan going, though.
Yeah.
But I did get up during the night and turn it around a little bit, but I still want to hear it hum so I can sleep right on. If I turn it off, you know I wake up? Berman says, boy, that's better than the alarm clock. He gets up instead of calling me in the morning, he just unplugs the fan. And I come out of that bed, I can't sleep. And if I go to bed and it's not plugged in, I say, well, it's chilly enough, I don't need the fan. I won't plug it in. And I'll lay there and I'll let it. I'll hear every crick, and every time the kids turn over in bed, I hear that. So I just lay there listening. I can't go to sleep. It's a habit.
We just finished breakfast. Would you have a...
No, thank you. I
had a cup of coffee.
I had a cup of coffee with Berman this morning, but I've had more coffee over this weekend. Helen, one of the girls that was there at the house visiting, all she does is go around with a cup of coffee in her hand, you know. And that looks so good, and I hadn't had any coffee in 3 months, so she got me back on the coffee track again. I'm telling you,
she had
a pot cooking all the time.
Well, let me tell you, Shirley, I just have this left over and I sip it.
Uh-huh.
And that's about all the coffee I have during the day.
Uh-huh.
Just what's left over
just
for
a
breakfast.
Cup.
That's not right.
Well, I don't drink normally. If I have one cup in the morning, I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's enough to hurt anybody.
Shirley, how did Helen and who else was it with you?
Helen and Chet and her two boys, Mary Alice and her husband and her seven boys, and Dan and Rosalie, I call her Rose, and her small baby, and another one just walking, and another one about 4 years old. And boy, I had to watch that swimming pool like a hawk.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. But I didn't have to watch it all that close, though, because all the big ones were forever in the pool, you know, and they could watch it. The little ones didn't get in. But when there wasn't one batch in the swimming pool, and one batch fishing, and one batch riding horseback, and another batch, what else do they do? Riding the mini bike.
Yeah, so the mini bike.
Yeah, they're all rotating, so there wasn't so many in the pool, there wasn't so many doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But fishing, they went down there and they caught bass in that thing that long.
My God.
And some, well, the smallest one was about 2 pounds. And we had enough to make a fish fry when they left. But you know what? We put them in the freezer. This was on Saturday. Friday and Saturday they went fishing. I kept the ones they caught on Sunday because they didn't get frozen enough. We put them in the freezer and frozen. When they left, they took their fish with them. And John Brown, I was planning on a fish fry. I'll be darned if they didn't. But they caught them, they cleaned them, they took them.
Nice.
Yeah. With you?
Yeah. I can tell Mr. Miles I was in the kitchen all last week. I fixed so many pies and cakes and roasts and hams to love about. I don't want to fix another bite to eat the rest of the week.
All she had to cook bake was just one little cake, she said.
Uh huh. One. Well, it wasn't a little. It was a long cake, but it was. I meant to bring that recipe over here for you. It's a strawberry shortcake. But you mix the strawberries in strawberry gelatin and let it congeal. Then you mix up your batter. And you cut up, if you use the miniature marshmallows, you put about 2 cups. Well, in my large pan, I use 2 cups. It calls for 1 cup, but mine is a double recipe. Of marshmallows on the bottom of the pan after greasing it. Then pour your batter over that, and then you pour your strawberry gelatin over the top of that and bake it. And boy, if that isn't delicious. It's easy to make, and it's just as good as it can be.
But they didn't just
no
come
problem.
In on you. You had warning.
Yeah, they all told me they were coming. See, some of them wanted to go to the ball game, and some of them wanted to go to this Western Jamboree.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So they all stopped in for the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
How about that?
And they all knew, they all know one another, and they wanted to meet there at our place. So we just had a ball.
But did you get to the jamboree?
Not yet. The closest I won't get to it is on that radio. Every now and then I get to hear a little bluegrass. That's about as far as I want to go, I guess. But it lasts for 3 days. Saturday, Sunday. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Well, the children want to go to
Hatchie Creek. Yeah. Haven't you heard about it?
Heard about it, but I haven't been.
It's supposed to be the first one ever held in Florida.
Yeah.
And it really sounds exciting. I'd really love to go. It costs $4 for admitting. $4 a day is about all you spend over there. Then I believe you get your eats and your drinks and whatnot free. But they have campers. They have people in tents. And everyone coming from all over just to hear this bluegrass. And I'd love to hear it. That's part of my favorite music.
This weekend?
Uh-huh.
I see.
Yeah, I think it is this weekend, because Rose and her husband were talking about going. Yeah. No? No, it hasn't come yet. It'll be this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Hatchie Creek.
Well, they'll be back up for that.
No, they're sightseeing. They've gone off. They're staying in motels and whatnot and traveling around. Some of them have little things that they can make a tent on the back of their cars with. They'll be putting up over there, and they'll stay there from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But right now they're going to Disney World and traveling around. I didn't want any part of that.
but you're not going to make Hatchie Creek yourself?
I'd love to, but I don't see how I can. We've got to get Johnny situated with some animals, because he's getting far behind. He should have been doing this during the summer. And,
he should.
Yeah, he should have been long into this, but he's had to work and help Berman, and he's been quite a busy boy, so I haven't really pushed the issue, but his deadline is October the 1st. He's got to show that he
and
has the animals.
And you've been pushed yourself.
Yeah, quite a bit.
But
I don't know. With the kids at home, you've got to keep something going for them, and they get so bored. You know, they just. But I don't think any of them was bored over this past weekend. I mean, they're bored. I'm telling you, they were.
hear Johnny making a hand now.
Is he what?
Making a hand.
He's really surprised me. He does more than I ever did with Berman, you know. I used to get out there and help Berman hay and whatnot, but Johnny does more than I ever did. He helps to work on the machinery. He's quite a hand on the machinery. This is, you know, he's got quite a few awards last year for working on machinery.
You didn't tell me that.
Yeah, he did, and he's very interested in it. And he gets pieces of lawnmowers and puts them together, and makes a brand new lawnmower out of this one, and then turns around and sells them, and works on just anything. Mr. Stanley called him and wanted him to come over and work on some machinery over there. So he's doing real good. But, of course, he doesn't have the experience. He has to keep doing this, you know, to keep...
Sure.
But he's watched Berman take so many things apart and use odds and ends to try to fix something that he's pretty versatile and
He can be there and still not know what Berman's doing. It's just, you know, that's what makes a difference, isn't it? When they see what's going on.
Yes. Now when he comes in from school in the afternoons, he'll go down to the house and get the tractor and hook it up to the hay baler and go down there and the fluffer and go down there and fluff the hay for us. And he keeps that fluff so that it cures up a lot faster.
Yeah.
And if it's not quite ready, then he'll go over and mow down another patch, which is a big help, you know, to have it all mowed down and getting it ready for curing. And then all Berman has to do is hop on the baler and bale it, and then he picks it up while I drive behind the baler and just throws it into the truck. It's like a feather. He's got the height.
You know, just a little help on that hay, and it makes a great deal of difference. Now, that fluffing is no big job.
You know what we did? We mowed down a whole patch like this on the outside.
Circular?
Sort of in a circular motion. And I take the truck and follow right behind the baler. You know, this is coming off the end of the baler. I follow right behind the baler so that you don't have but about three steps. But by the time Johnny gets a hold of the bale and holds on to it, I've already got the tail end of the truck there for him to put the hay on, see? Just by moving as fast as the baler's going.
Yeah.
And then all he has to do is pick it up and throw it over. Then we go on, you know, walk right on around the field like this, and he doesn't have to stoop over and pick it up and put it into the truck. So it really works. But you got to stay on your toes. You can't stop to rest. You got to keep going.
Yeah. You gotta wipe your perspiration.
No, he hasn't got time.
And then some of the boys stack that.
And Timmy and Danny take turns in stacking it on the truck.
On the truck. Uh-huh.
And Bonnie stays home and does the housework. So we're all busy during the hay season.
And the family—that's wonderful to have enough family help.
Tommy sits in the cab with me complaining because I'm not going fast enough.
That's always a hell.
I'll be glad when that kid's big enough to help. I'll sure enjoy putting him to work. When I'm going anywhere, he says, "You didn't give a signal. You didn't turn your lights on. You turn your whippersnappers on. That's the window wipers." I'm telling you, I don't do anything right. I don't know why I haven't had a bad accident before now. But they're a lot of fun, I tell you. They're nerve wracking at times.
Well, Shirley, how did now you didn't go to hear the preacher by yourself?
No. Rose and her family.
Yeah.
Didn't want to go because the babies were kind of irritable, and I'm glad they didn't, because if they'd have cried during that service, I'd have died, because they're so small. The little ones are so small that they're
used to be used
and being
to
out of their own environment.
The congregations, they just go right. They just
but
listen.
I mean, we enjoyed it so immensely. You could have heard a pin drop in that church at all times that he was speaking. It was so quiet. And there was one little baby that was there that did cry a little bit, and she took her back to the nursery. But I was kind of glad Rose and her family didn't go because of that, because they were kind of irritated. You know, being away from home and being that small and off schedule and everything, she was a little nervous. So she rested, and he took care of the babies while she rested while we were at church.
Well.
So it was good for them that way, and it was good for the babies, and it was good for us that we didn't have to hear them hollering. And then Helen and Chet and her two boys, and four of these seven boys in this other family went with us.
Yeah, so that was a good
and our five.
That's a contingent. If you had that every time, you'd have to make
we'd
a
have, we'd
thing,
have a church of our own.
Yeah, the preacher would have to wait until you got there.
And there was our five. And that little Tommy, sometimes I could skin him. They had the supper, you know, after church. And they passed around the bread. And of course, Berman and I didn't take any because we hadn't been going to church. We didn't feel that we were, that it was right. So we passed up the bread and the wine when it came along. The grape juice. I call it wine. But anyhow, the children were all sitting on the other side of the church. Well, now, those four boys and Helen's two boys were old enough, they know, you know, whether they should take it or not. They know what it's all about. Well, mine saw these boys all take this, you know. And I've always told mine never to take it unless, you know, they knew what they were doing. Well, Johnny knows what he's doing, so, and Bonnie too. And they've been going to church at Cross Creek, so it was all right for them to take it. The younger ones hadn't been going to church as often. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what it's all about, so they shouldn't have participated. But anyhow, kid, they passed him around the plate, and he took his little piece of bread. He says, "Is that all I get?"
That's right.
He says, "Is that all I get?" You know, I could have choked him. And I was sitting on the other side. If I'd have been next to him, I'd have, I swear, embarrassed the life out of me. And the guy that was passing the plate shook anyhow. You know, he's Mr. Harrison, if you know him. It's his 50th wedding anniversary next week. But he shakes anyhow. And he started to laugh. And I thought he's going to spill the whole plate. Then they came around with the grape juice. And Tommy looked over to see if the others were taking theirs, and they were, so he reached over and took his. And he spilled half of it, getting it to his mouth. It was just a little bit anyhow, so Lloyd and Jackie and Johnny, one of the boys that's going to study for the missionary, was sitting there, and they kind of got tickled at it, but they kind of smiled and kept to themselves, you know, and they... I think Jackie wanted to disappear. He was embarrassing him. And so when church was all over, they told Berman about it in the car coming home. And Berman turned around and he says, "Tommy," he says, "why didn't you ask for seconds since you spilled half of it?" And I thought I'd die. I told Berman. I said, "I'm going to have a talk with that kid. He will ask for seconds the next time." It's just like Berman to say something like that. Why don't you ask for seconds since you spilled half of it?
You don't need to go anywhere. You got a car right there all the time.
Oh,
Shirley, I never will forget that breakfast we had over there. I thought for a long time after that, well, sir, I'll just happen over there early some morning and, of course,
I don't remember
that. Was that in the school time or the other?
I don't even remember you coming for breakfast.
Well, I can't give you the occasion, but it was...
an occasion.
They was all there, and it was just phenomenal to see that food disappear.
Well, it does. Every meal.
Yeah. Seemed like Faye was over there.
I don't
because we used to quote that. There was a few eggs left on the platter, and somebody said, "Well, you don't want to waste these," and just rake them off the plate. You know, you can do that, and that's a healthy attitude towards food. I think I've done that many times myself. It's been a good while. I haven't been associated with anybody, you see, who.
Well, you know, with these little kids that don't eat all dinner, you know, if you put too much on a plate.
Yeah.
And the mother of these little kids said, "Where's your garbage disposal?" I said, "A what?" She says, "Where's your garbage disposal? Where do you put your garbage?" I said, "We never have it." I thought she died. But I told her, I put on their plates when I know they're going to eat. They eat it. That's that. So, we don't have a garbage disposal. That was a strange one to me.
You know, when I first, when I used to go over to Miss Mary's, the center of the whole thing was that dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's got so I never even see them eat. I guess they do.
I was over there Monday. I promised her just as soon as I got the kids in school, I was going to come over and visit her because I hadn't seen her all during summer. You see, I'd been so busy with the kids. I'd call her once in a while, but I didn't get to go over to see her. And she said, "I'll believe it when I see you coming." So I said, "All right." I said, I'll be over one of these days. Well, that Monday, I went over. And I decided I'd just stay, you know, and visit for a while. I put my wash out real early and went on over there. And I guess we sat there and visited for 2-3 hours. And she had a pan of biscuits in the stove when I went over.
Oh, yeah.
And she had some beans of some sort cooking on the stove and some, well, it was black-eyed peas and some string beans and squash. I don't know what. She really had, you know, a lot of vegetables cooked. And she asked me if I'd stay for dinner. And I said, "Well, since I see that pan of biscuits, I've got to eat a biscuit anyway." So she fixed my steam. We sat down and I had dinner with them. And we really had a nice visit.
You really ate. And that was on a Monday.
That was on a Monday. Just dropped in, you see, to visit. And,
well, I've just lost my rabbit's foot. I don't hit him in the right time. You didn't
get there before dinner, maybe. But since Marvin's working, I guess they don't have a regular hour to eat. He gets out and works in the hay, and I guess whenever he can get a way to get in, it's kind of...
Well, that's no way to live.
Well, last night, for the first time in a long time, Berman came in. Let me see. Huh. Oh, I went to market yesterday. That's where I was.
Oh,
I
did you?
Remember that. Went to market, and I sat there all afternoon.
Yeah. I'm threatening to do that all the time.
I love to go.
I just love to go.
And I find out so much from all those farmers, you know.
Yeah.
If you ask a lot of questions, you sure can get some answers around there. But anyway, I was sitting around and... half the animals I didn't see go through the ring because I was busy answering or talking or asking questions.
Yeah.
But anyway, Berman and I came in, I guess about 5 o'clock. He met me over to market, drove over to market to see if I was ready. If he hadn't come over, I guess I'd have still been sitting there. But he came over and yeah, he can't stand it. He stayed maybe an hour and he wants to go.
Yeah.
But I don't. I thoroughly enjoy
it.
Oh, it is. When it comes to something like this, it gets very monotonous. So. I bought a few heifers over there, but they weren't anything extra special.
Yeah.
I bought them for another man. I bought them for myself, but I sold them to this other man because he's been wanting them so bad. And I told myself, first chance I see some that look, you know, halfway decent, I'll get them for you. So I did. But, I had drove the truck in with the cattle rack as far as the through that university with all those students there. I'll never do it again. Not with a cataract. I can't see out the back window, and that bothers me. And Berman had the side window adjusted for him and not for me, so, and I couldn't readjust it because then it would mess him up. So I'll never do that again. But anyhow, I met him there. We went on over to the I left him in the truck, and I took the car and went over to the market. And then he met me there after work.
Yeah, and it's going out and feeding the town, Shirley.
But we
I don't want her to put in her day now.
She won't.
No.
She's been gone a couple of weeks, and she got some things upstairs she needs to do.
Oh, I'm having a good time. Don't push me out.
But we didn't get in until about 5:30, I guess. We unloaded the heifers, and we had company sitting in the yard when we got there, so we visited with them for a little bit. Berman jumped on the tractor and went down and baled up some hay, and I went in and had fixed supper. About the time I got supper fixed, here come the preacher from another church that we hadn't gone to, fixing to ball us out because we didn't go to his church down Cross Creek.
Yeah,
but,
he didn't like that.
He didn't like that one bit. But anyway, I told him, I said, we thoroughly enjoyed it over there. We're going to go back again next Sunday. I didn't care whether he liked it or not, but I told him that we were going to go back there, back to Island Grove. So I didn't hit just right with him.
Well,
he
what
didn't
did
stay
you
long.
What did you learn from the? Did they have many animals?
What they had was fit to be buried. Some of them.
Yeah.
The older cows, you know, the younger stuff. They had a lot of Black Angus, and Angus and Hereford Cross, and Bramer. And a lot of the Angus was in much better shape. Now, they had exactly 10 Hereford heifers that went through there between 250 and 350. They weren't very big. They're small.
Yeah.
And
a little small to buy.
Yeah. But they sold anywhere from 50 to 60 cents a pound. That small age. Small size. And then the bigger they got, they sold 50 cents a pound. So 53, something.
That's
like
down.
That. Oh, yeah. It was way down. I thought maybe there would be some nice steers that go through there that I could get to butcher, you know, because I'm low on my feet freeze, and I'm looking for these heifers for this fella. So that's the reason why I went. But I hadn't been in so long, I wanted to see. But they were down last week. No, a week before last, because Berman and I went in for about 2-3 hours, and he was raving, so I had to leave. But
you can always get one of these steers that come out of the feedlots, but they are so high and they're so big.
Well, I said I didn't want anything over 400 or 500 pounds. I didn't want anything over that size.
Is that good size to butcher?
Well, you still got a couple of months that they can chew on pasture between now and then and put feed into them. Between now and frost, maybe, and if we're lucky. And I figured they'd do a little more growing, maybe. But I figured that'd be about the size I'd want to put in the freezer. They're good and lean. The meat is good and tasty at that age. I think at a year of age, they start tasting a little tough. The meat's a little tough and a little tangy taste too. The last few that we butchered was about 500-600 pounds. But I figured that they'd grow off another. If I bought one around 400 pounds, I figured they'd grow off a little more before frost.
And you just plan on feeding them out?
Yeah. Sweet.
Well, now that grain's going to cost you now.
It sure is. Johnny, this is one reason why we have let it go and let it go so much during the year, because I've talked to so many farmers and I've talked to the agriculture people up here and Johnny's ag teacher, And they all agree that it's going to be very tough for him to get a steer and raise it up and try to make a $500 profit on it. He just can't do it, not with the price of feed is. So I said, unless they can give these kids a break and not expect that much out of them, I don't see how in the world we can venture into this and make his program work for him this year. So that he's going to try his best to see what he can do about it. But now they only give us to the 1st of October, which is right here, to get something for him to raise. So I said, I told Johnny, I said, one way or another, we'll go ahead and get it. And if they don't want to help you out on that end, I said, we'll just have to take it over a longer period of months before you turn in your report. And that way he can get a bigger growth and more money per pound. But he'll have to take them to the steer show. And following the steer show, he should sell them at the auction.
Yeah.
And it's that price that'll count toward his record, you see. And he won't get it if he has to pay. Say he paid $250 for a 400-pound calf, something like that. He's going to have to put a lot of feed into that animal. Well, really, he shouldn't start off now with anything less than 500 pounds. I mean, what's your animal's weight? But this is what he's, because he should have something between 500 and 600 pounds right now.
Yeah.
And because February, the steer show. I think it's February, but to have an animal go through that soon, see, he should have been working with one during the summer months.
And that's what it's for. That's what the program is for. Give him something to do.
he's going to enter in his machinery that he worked on this summer. And all the equipment that he worked on and his records, he's entering this. The irrigation of the watermelons, just everything that he's done, the hay season this year, and the fact that he does the fluffing and the raking and the mowing of the hay, that all counts up. So, along with this, and if he doesn't do well with the steer, then he won't be so. He won't be far behind. He can catch up, I think. But it's just a shame to, with the high price of beef, of feed, that they can't make something. It's kind of discouraging for a boy, you know, his age to work out, especially after Patrick, because he weighed 1,250 pounds. And he got $1,250 for it. He got $1 a pound for that steer, for that bull. And he's still crying about it. He didn't want to part with it.
Yeah.
And he has ran me up a bill you wouldn't believe, just calling Trenton asking about that bull every day. So I got to find something that, more or less, to kind of comfort him.
Well,
that
you won't
get
find another
with.
Patrick.
Never. We'll never find another Patrick.
I just wonder how much you had in Patrick.
He's got the records. He's got the records of him. But he figures he made $750 profit on him after the medicines and everything.
Yeah, that's a pretty good price.
It is. He did real well, he thought. But he did, I thought, exceptionally well after fighting with that animal. As sick as he was, you remember back in December and January and February, running those high fevers, I'll never forget it. But it was touch and go there for a long time. We thought we were going to lose it. But for an animal to come out as beautiful as he was, I meant to bring his pictures over. And Johnny took another, he took 21 pictures. There was 21 pictures on his film. He took them all to Patrick the day before he left. Sure did. I hope they all turn out.
No, we've never had another Patrick around here.
Never. That bull, he'll never die of a heart attack. He never gets in a hurry. He's just like Johnny. Johnny and him together. Johnny just nonchalantly, you know. He never gets in a big hurry. The bull was just like him. I said there was two personalities alike.
Patrick knew his own business. He knew where he was going.
And did he ever love feed? had that steer fat. Now, first, you know, he'd sit there and eat hay all day long. He wouldn't go pick anything else. He'd just eat hay all day long. Even when he was sick, he ate that hay.
He never had anything like that.
Oh, I'm telling you, that bull used to love hay. Then when we ran out of hay, he knew where that feed came from, and he started in with that feed.
Yeah, and he saw you coming, he'd go around to the feed box.
Boy, that was the only time he did get in a little bit of a hurry. When he'd walk at a trot, he was in a big hurry.
And Johnny could just take him anywhere.
Oh, he did everything to that bull. I'm telling you, that bull, if he said, told him to sneeze, he'd sneeze. I'm telling you the truth, he could do anything with him. It's just amazing to watch.
I listened to Sunday. Sunday's a sort of a long day. I don't, especially this hot weather. And I listened to this program. And he was on one of those talky programs on Sunday. He's the one, you know, that was shot.
Who is this again?
Senator Stennis from Mississippi.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's the one that
uh-huh.
the boys held up and shot him.
Yeah.
And I was just somehow or other, it just struck me. And I've heard him a good number of times on television. It just struck me. And it's like Patrick, you see. The way the ranchers, the breeders go now, you see, they don't handle animals. And all the cows look alike. If they got any off colors, you see, they'll dispose of them. So you just don't get any personality anymore.
Oh, every one of ours has got personality. Every one of ours is different.
It's the way you handle them.
Yeah.
But not the way Bill Snead handles them.
No, no. Well, he gets so many, and that gets boring
so
to him, I guess.
So there was an overt North Vietnamese attack. That would not be sufficient reason in your opinion?
Well, yeah, if there was an overt attack on us, involving us.
No, I'm not
sure. Stop yet. Well, no, I don't think so. I think under this War Powers Bill, we put that up to the Congress. Now, you can't fully anticipate every case, and neither can the president.
I hear that.
And give them authority to strike back, you see, but 30 days was the limit on under the Senate version. But I think it ordinarily is going to take a vote of the Congress.
I listened to that three times. I listened to it yesterday at lunch. Nobody was here, so I just listened to that and ate some cheese. And
that's a good machine, you know, because a lot of times you don't get everything out of the first conversation.
Well,
and if you can write
it's
it back,
not so much the
it?
Machine; it's the you know the system that's hooked up.
Oh,
and not much the machine.
That's good.
Well, you could stick one on your machine over there.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's any good, you can play it for the Berman when it gets back.
Well, Johnny's got a tape recorder back there in his room. And egotistical. He gets back there and he'll blow his horn, you know, and then he wants to hear how it sounds, so he'll tape his own horn, then he'll play it back and listen to it. Boy, then he shakes his head and he'll wipe it all out and start all over, you know.
Yeah.
We go through this, especially the Marine Corps hymn. He gets back there playing that thing.
Yeah.
Anybody coming up, they wonder what in the world's going on. Here he is, his tape's going and he's blowing and, he has the time of that tape recorder.
Yeah. Well, now, you see, your cows, my cows, they're not alike.
No.
And they all have their own ways of doing things. But Bill Snead's up there. He got 200 or 300 heifers, you see, right in the same field. I don't know whether he's got that many or not.
He can't tell one from another. He doesn't know unless they have a tag on them.
Well, he may tell, but I can't tell. They don't. And these here, you see, you wouldn't confuse any two of them. And so he'd never have a patchy.
Yeah.
He'd have fine.
Well, that's what I mean. I'd probably go over there and find a steer, but I mean a bull that we could make a steer, but you'd have to work 6 months just to get him to go through the same gate twice.
They haven't been handled.
I don't want anything like that. Matter of fact, one of these heifers I got yesterday, I told Berman, I said, now that I see the personality of that heifer, she's going to go back to market Wednesday. I'm not waiting till next Monday. I'm going to take her back Wednesday. I never
thing.
Go to Wednesday market.
That's
but she
thing.
Looks at you like she could run right
yes,
straight
sir.
Over you
and
not cough one bit. She would go right over the top of you.
Yeah.
She's just like one other one I bought from Bill Sneed that we sold at market. And she had a heifer, and I started with that heifer at 3 months of age, taming that heifer down so she wouldn't be like her mama.
Yeah.
She's the sweetest little thing now I've got, but I mean, if I'd have let her go, she'd been just like her mama. She sure would have been.
Let me tell you, this little thing here, Shirley, you saw this one.
This one in the yard? Oh, yeah.
This is the one that's sort of an orphan. Her mama, you see, was the one. That's your vet. What's his name?
Anderson.
He looked out and said, look at this old cow. She can't walk. She's leaving one leg. Oh, he said, she'll be down in 2 months. Get her to market. Well, I know to myself, I appreciated saying it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, she wasn't, and she's still not.
Mm-hmm.
That was way last summer. And well, he was here at the weaning time. That's when it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, she won't go to market. She's been my main cow all this time. She can just have the run of this place. You know,
yeah.
I told you about that.
Yeah.
Well,
she had the calf.
She had a calf.
I was more surprised.
And it was late. It was just a beautiful little cow.
Mm.
Well, you saw her.
But she couldn't keep up with the cows when they changed pastures, so I kept her in this pasture here.
Oh.
Well, the little calf don't have many companions.
Uh-huh.
So
you don't go over there to join me.
Yeah. And she turned out to be, she's got plenty of growth in her. All she needs now is somebody who would give her a bottle for months and feed her. And she'd be up to par, up to standard.
Mm-hmm.
And she seemed to be taking after her mama, and her mama's the best cow I had.
Oh,
the
she looked like a nice little heifer. Now, she, have you been hand feeding her, or is she?
No. Oh, I give her handouts.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
But no milk. She's not on milk. You weaning her, aren't you? Or
no, she's on her mama.
She's still on her mama.
Oh, yeah. But now, when I do in her, she gets enough milk to kind of keep her going, you see. Now, you see, unless you sell her for beef, she needs to be where somebody was.
She's too pretty to go for beef.
That's it.
Well, I tell you, Martha, one of the cows, remember we bought 3 heifers from you after we bought the bunch of cows, and we came back and bought those 3 heifers? And she's about, 9, 10 years old now.
Yeah.
And she's had a heifer every year.
Yeah.
Every year. Well, about every 11 months she has a heifer.
Yeah.
I never saw anything like it. She's never had a bull. All been heifers. And she's had one every year since we've had her.
Yeah.
And boy, they are pretty animals. And I've kept every one of her heifers.
Is that the
Martha? She was real
yeah.
big and pretty, real dark color.
Hmm. Well, that little one is so. I can't believe
yeah.
that she gets right through the fence.
Yeah.
She likes the wee ones because he puts them over there half the time because that pasture's not so big, and she gets he puts the wee ones in there, and that little the little calf gets right in front of them and sticks her tail in the air and runs, and they all chase her. And they're all 3 times the size of her. It's really fun.
I don't imagine your family would be interested in this. This is modern.
Oh my.
Yeah, it's the old time way of doing things. It's got I can get the copyright, you see, and they show you how they make all these things. And they talk and they see like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the best I've tried to get people to talk about moonshining, and they go into all of it, and the best thing on moonshining is right that I've seen is right in here. It's hard. And it's not condescending or anything apologetic. It takes a rather favorable view of moonshining.
And now you know you can get licensed to go into this. I think. As a private individual, I don't think they can sell it for, you know.
Yeah.
But they can make it for their own use.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I heard a conversation here not long ago on the radio about that.
Yeah. And then they talked to some of them. This is Mr. Hillard Green, and he's cute as pie. Now these this is done by high school students.
Oh, they are.
So it's. You see, what they get from Mr. Green
is
not, you know, it's not adult
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they get. It doesn't interest me. I'd just like to talk to him, let him sit down here with us, you see,
mm-hmm.
and talk. And he'd talk entirely different from that.
Yeah.
But he got that's a wicked smile he's got. You see. He's cutting up tomatoes.
Yeah.
I thought about that thing, and
Foxfire book.
Foxfire book, yeah. Now this
dressing.
Yeah, they keep that going, and what that's for is the kind of thing that the children can do in school, if they have someone you see that who can help them.
Do you mind if I read this? I'd like to. Like to
you need a copy
show it to
it.
Johnny too.
Yes, I use that. So
you do?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
That's
where can I get a copy like this?
Shelley, I was going to call Mike's and see if he had any, and if he doesn't have them,
Mike's bookstore,
the Florida bookstore would have them.
Okay.
If I'm up there, I would ask him. And I haven't been up there in some time.
Well, Berman, matter of fact, is going in to get Johnny a couple of books there at Mike's bookstore. I'll have him check and see too, And there's another little bookstore. What's the name of that place? Is it Mike's? It's right next to the old post office.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's that other one located? There's another small bookstore that I've been going to.
I don't know.
They wouldn't have these at the library, would they?
Well, you wouldn't want them. Get a library copy. You'd want to have one of those around
the
house.
Yeah.
If you're interested in the store,
Quilt is something. Yeah.
Yeah. And they put that thing together, you see, and wrote out all those things. And it's not the adult people who do that. It's the adults just direct it or you know help them. They write it out themselves. And you see. They do it all, and they take the cameras out and the photographers out of cameras and the tape recorders out, and they then they do all this editing of it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they get through, they've done a lot of nice work. But it's nice things they like to do. They like to do. Now you see, like Miss Mary. the children could do that. I couldn't do it. But
so many of these things are fading out. In another generation
right.
or two,
that's
there won't
right.
be anything left of them.
Well, now you see, she lived in that little house over there, in that house she's been living in. And it's pretty light construction, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, was built, that was a nice house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, times change and she gets self-conscious about it.
Yeah. so now she's changed it all around, and
now
she's not through with it yet. She's going to put brick all the way up on this side of it, all the way to the back.
Yeah. Well, now you see, I'd rather have the house where it was.
Yeah.
Well, you hadn't.
Well.
But you've got children coming up, it doesn't matter.
It's more of a landmark, something of history. And when you see, well, like us now, when we built that house there, of course, we haven't been here years and years and years and years, but she has.
Yeah.
And it sort of goes along with the landmark and everything. But now I hate to see her change it, because it was something of a novelty to see. And now,
well,
you don't see old houses like that much anymore.
Yeah, well, you see, she wants to rise in the eyes of
yeah,
people.
Yeah, well.
And I guess you have to put out money on a house in order to rise. But see, I don't want to rise.
Where was it I saw on television here not long ago? A lady, I believe it was in Tennessee, they had made houses of sod.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
They built houses of sod, and this woman said that she wished she had moved out, moved into another house, and she wanted to move back.
Yeah.
Because she said it was cool in the summertime and warm in the wintertime. And she said to her it was the most beautiful house, and it was clay floors. There's no floors, and it was clay floors.
Yeah.
She said to her that was the most beautiful house that there ever was. That was a sod floor. And they, and this old timer was showing some other people how to build a sod house.
Yeah. I remember that very well, and it hadn't been long, had it?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't.
That
really got me.
I never heard of that.
I'd love to see that. Right out of nowhere, stood this sod house, you know.
Was that Charles Carroll? Out in Kansas.
I believe it was. Yeah, it was Kansas.
Yeah.
It was Kansas.
Now you see what you could do if you had this thing hitched up to your radio, television.
Yeah.
You see, what you do, Shirley. Now you've got so many things. You wouldn't do this, but Bonnie could do it. Tommy, maybe Jim could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you listen, well, he doesn't listen to the right programs.
No. They're not interested to him.
I wouldn't know. Yeah, no. No, he's not interested in the sod house. So you don't listen up. But you see, it's just so easy, you see, when you
drink. I'm doing
renovating the
door.
Doing all the during the time we're
all. See, it's just so easy. And if you have to connect it every time you do it, you won't do it.
Yeah.
You just get this old thing here is 10 or 15 years old.
Well, you've got it right handy there, so that when you do want something taped, it's right there. You don't have to go get it to hook up to it.
That's right. And I put it, I don't listen to this speaker, you see. I listen to this. It's a little better than this one up here.
Uh-huh.
Is brought to you by the Colgate Palmolive Company, makers of Colgate with MFP fluoride.
The sound just a little bit better when it goes
through.
And then you can keep those eight and play it for the children. And what I found is that the replaying, you get so much more out of it.
That's what I say. And the first time you hear a conversation, you don't get near as much out of it.
They used to talk about people who told the same stories over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, they improve with age. It wasn't so much that they improve with age, but if you listen to them the next time so on, you see, you saw more in them if you listen.
Mm-hmm.
But that listening is not, not so many people do that. Listen to such things as that.
I think your mind's wander. I know it does with me. Sometimes my mind wanders on so many different things that I can't really half concentrate on what I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be washing dishes or washing clothes and you know, something that you do all the time that you can do without thinking about what you're doing, and my mind will wander on to 100 different things while I'm standing there.
Yeah.
You know, just flashing and just thinking about one thing and then another, and things that I've got to remember and things that I must do and I never get around to it. But the mind is funny. It just keeps wandering. And when you're listening to someone really telling you something you want to hear, a lot of times you get an interruption with about thinking about something else. So.
And you realize at the time that you're not getting it straight.
That's right. And you wish you were. Yeah. Yeah. Well, how is your school load over there? Is it? Are you going every day, or is it just part time?
Just part time.
Uh huh.
I haven't worked full time for a long time. Okay.
There's quite a few students there this year. Boy.
Yeah.
I went riding through that university yesterday about dinner time, and I wish I was anywhere else in this world.
You're the wrong place.
Oh.
You got the wrong day.
Boy. They're not like that every day there? Or is that just the beginning?
I imagine so. It may be a little feverish for this time. A lot of new ones there.
Uh-huh. Well, boy, they didn't anyone seem to know where they were going.
No.
Cut out in front of you and just. Oh.
Well, now, Berman doesn't have to meet that head on, does he? He feels it, but not.
Well, now today at dinner time, I've got to meet him down there at dinner time.
Yeah.
To see, this is his lunch hour, and we have business we got to take care of on his lunch hour. So I have to go down and meet him, and I want to go to the bank. I want to go to several other places, and get squared away, and he wanted to go with me, so I had to meet him at 12 o'clock there on University Avenue. So we're going to be right there in the mess again today. And I'd rather take a beating than to go in there.
Yeah.
And
you put it off a few days. If you done it last week.
Yeah, if I had.
If I only
had.
Oh, I do like it up there between terms. But you can just drive on that either side of the street you want to.
Yeah. Roman says, boy, he has had the work orders in there this week.
Oh, is that right?
Mm. He's so swamped. And he told me, he says, you might see me at 4:30 tomorrow night, and you might see me at 6:30 at the market, you know, when he was going to join me over there at the market when he got off from work. He said, I might be there at 4:30 and I might be there at 6:30. He said, if I see something urgent, he said, I'll take care of it and get it done.
Yeah.
And I'll have to come in and face it in the morning. So he was there at 4:30. He got it done.
Well,
he gets so irritated with some of the students.
I used to hear Mr. Patterson talk about that.
But he doesn't let it bother him.
No use to, is it?
No. He used to let it get the best of him, but anymore he kind of goes along with it.
Yeah.
But he's been there now almost 7 years. He ought to know what he's doing by now.
Yeah, it's hard to believe he's been there that long.
Yeah. Well, my baby's 9 years old, and it's hard to believe he's that old.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, Charlie, I just want you to sit down and have a cup of tea.
Uh-huh.
We can, what you want to do is see those animals back there.
Well, I have to leave here after 11, so.
It won't take you but a minute.
All right. But
we can go back.
I want to be sure I get to get in there at the right time, because he's going to meet me on University Avenue, and I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to have him come down through there and then not find me.
No.
He'd kill me.
No. Oh, that's a risky business, meeting some of your family.
On University Avenue.
On University Avenue, yeah.
I told him, I said, let me meet you somewhere else. He said, no. He says, well, the reason for that is that if I can find a place to park along, he's going to watch for the car.
Yeah.
And he's going to I'm going to jump out and get in with him in the truck when we're going down, and then when we come back, he'll drop me off, and I'll get in the car and come home. That way we don't have to drive two vehicles all through town.
Shella, tell me a little bit more about your preacher. You'd heard him before, hadn't you?
No, this is the first time I'd heard him. He's been a good friend of ours for years.
Oh, he has?
Uh-huh.
Well, hey.
But we just never...
You're not on Clay Electric.
Yeah. And, but, I forget how we got to meet Russell in the first place. I don't remember how, but Berman knew him first and brought him out to the house, and he had his wife and children with him, and, we had just sat down to have supper, and we asked him to come in and have supper with us, and that's the first time I met him, and he had supper with us that night.
Oh, really?
And at that time, he was a very tall, very frail individual, and he was very nervous and very high strung. And he complained about working very hard, you know, putting in a lot of hours, and not, you know, he was very conscientious about getting his work done right, proper at the right time.
Yeah.
And so, he was full of complaints at that, I remember that first meeting we had. They came out several times to visit us with us. We went to their place and visited with them a few times.
Oh, did you?
And, I don't know, we just got to be good friends, but when I heard, then he was sick. He had some back trouble and went to the hospital here, about 2 years ago. And he had his back operated on. He had some prostate trouble and had that operated on. And then he had a nervous breakdown while he was in the hospital.
Good Lord.
Because he was worrying about getting out and doing his work, you know. And that's when it struck him to go into the missionary, because he promised the Lord if he ever got out of that hospital well and could carry on a decent life, that he would take up the missionary. So he did. He got better after that, and he began to relax, calm down.
Is that right?
And he went to the missionary school, and he's made the best preacher. I kept hearing people say how well he could preach. I guess it's been longer than 2 years ago that he went into the hospital, because he's been preaching about 2 years over at Island Grove.
Yeah.
Time's just slipped by me so that I don't realize. But anyway, he went to missionary school, and then he came out and he started visitation preaching, you know, from one church to another, visiting and preaching and substituting for other preachers and things like this. And the Sundays that he would happen to preach at our church, see, we were members of the Island Grove Baptist Church, and we switched and went over to Micanopy because all of the people at Island Grove were elderly people. And my children wanted some companions in their classroom, and it wasn't very interesting for them.
Yeah.
So for the children's sake, we loved it there. But for the children's sake, we moved over to Micanopy, where there were younger children and better Sunday schools.
Oh, it's hard on the children.
Yeah.
The church without it.
They didn't want to go. They'd carry on and fight and everything else when they go to
same,
church.
That's the same thing about the Fitz Iverson Church, you see. There's no children go.
Uh-huh. Well, they're not going to get children in there until they, you know, get a good Sunday school going. A lot of children.
Yeah.
People just won't stay with their children. So this is what happened. And we went on over to Micanopy, and we were there for, I guess, 3-4 years. We really liked the preacher over there, and then something happened, and he left. And then another preacher came in there, and they were squabbling, and I don't know what all. And they couldn't keep him, and he left, and another one went in there. Nobody was satisfied.
Yeah.
So it kind of fell apart. And then they built this church out here at Cross Creek, and Micanopy sponsored this church. It was a mother church of this church at Cross Creek.
I didn't realize
so
that.
They persuaded everyone that lived in Cross Creek to go to the Cross Creek church. Well, we didn't care to go to Cross Creek church. We wanted to continue going to the Micanopy church. And they acted very cold and very indifferent toward us because we were supposed to go to another church. This I never could understand.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we just quit going to church. We didn't like it. They didn't seem to want people, outsiders, other than the Micanopians, to go to Micanopy Church. And we didn't want to go to Cross Creek Church. The kids didn't want to go to Island Grove Church. And we didn't feel like driving any further to go to another church when we had three neighborhood churches. So we just stayed home.
Yeah.
And we'd read from the Bible and things like this. And the kids learned their Bible verses, but we still didn't get to go to church. We didn't go to church. So, but I'd been hearing all along about Russell preaching over at Island Grove. And I kept saying to Berman, let's go over there. He said, yeah, we'll go. We'll go to Island Grove.
Yeah.
But the kids didn't want to go back. So there was a squabble getting them ready for church and everything. So we just kind of went along with the tide and didn't go.
Yeah.
So this was the first time that we had just decided, Sunday morning, 9 o'clock, we decided we were going over there to church.
Oh, really?
We didn't dress. We weren't really prepared to go. But she said, throw some duds on the kids and let's go. And I said, all right. So I said, I'll go on one condition, that Jackie sings a special for me over at the church.
Yes.
So Jackie said, Aunt Shirley, for you. He's always called me Aunt Shirley. He's not. Helen is Berman's first cousin.
Yes.
And her children have always called me Aunt Shirley. And my kids have always called her Aunt Helen.
Yes.
See, so we're more like sisters than we are like distant cousins.
Yes.
Because of the kids, too, and being the ages they are. And so he said, Aunt Shirley, for you, I'd do anything. And he said, I'll sing any song you want me to sing. I said, no, I'll let you pick the song. So when he got over there, he sang the old Rugged Cross. And I'm telling you, there wasn't a dry eye in that whole church. It was just beautiful.
Well, what does it sound like? What does he do? He can really sing?
Oh, he can sing. And he doesn't sing only spiritual songs. This is all he'll sing. He won't sing anything else. They have tried to pay, you know, get him to go on this broadcasting station on the TV.
Yeah.
To sing Western music, and he won't do it. And they've offered him all kinds of pay to do this, and he won't do it. And he has got a spiritual group together called We're God's Children. And I think there's 14 or 15 in the group. The youngest one can't be younger than 13. The oldest one can't be over 22. And they've got to live God's way. They can't live any other way. They've set up their own rules and regulations to belong to this club. But they'll travel anywhere. They'll go anywhere in Florida to sing for any organization without pay. They won't take any pay for this at all. Now, they have supervisors or adults that will sponsor their trips, you know, will pay for all their trips wherever they go, people that can afford it.
Yeah.
Just and their parents, some of them follow the group and some of them don't. Helen goes to every one. That's Jackie's mother. She goes to all their trips and her family. But she has two boys. Lloyd, the other boy, also sings in the group. But he's not near the singer that Jackie is. He's just going along to be, you know.
How old is Jackie?
Jackie's 17, and Lloyd is
17. Good, man. And
he's
far along.
And he's done this. He said this has always been his dream, to get a bunch together like this and go out and sing for the Lord.
Well, you know, it would be tempting to me to sing some of the Western music, too, because some of that is right nice.
I like it. This is all I listen to on the radio. But,
yeah.
But and of course, they have spiritual songs along with the Western music. But Jackie said no, he wants to sing only songs for the Lord, you know, from the prayer book from the hymn book.
Well, he could pick the ones that suited him, you know.
Yeah, he should. He should venture out into more with his voice, because he's got such a beautiful voice.
Yes, yes.
But he wants to go to Oklahoma University, somewhere around there, to study under Oral Roberts for his missionary work.
Oh.
And he's already written letters to him, and Oral Roberts has written back to him, and they're corresponding quite frequently, and he's real serious about doing this.
Oh,
But I was hoping that he'd come and stay with us and go to the university and study music here at the university, because I understand they've got a beautiful program here.
Oh, boy.
For a music program here. Studying his background for his music. See, he's got to go back all the way back, get all this background before he can really understand it. This is what he wants to do. No, this is going to be his drawback. Now I don't know just how he's going to.
He wants to work with the people that'll pick him up where he is.
Well, this is why he wants to go on to study under Oral Roberts, because he's already got a program down there going.
Yeah.
And I'd like to suggest him study in here, but I thought maybe he'd get into something other than spiritual music.
You see, they got a one-track system here, and unless you fit in that track, it's just not for you.
Yeah.
And I've seen too many people, you see, who are really not interested in what they're doing here, trying to fit in the track, and all it does is waste time, and it's awfully discouraging to them, especially young people.
Well, there's a group over here that studies, wait a minute, it'll come to me, barbershop, quartet music, you know,
yeah.
Harmonizing.
That'd be just on the side.
Yeah, and, David is trying to, Colonia is the president of this organization over there, and he's been trying to get Jackie interested in that. I said, no, he won't do it. He doesn't want to do anything like that. He wants to stay in the spiritual songs with music. He doesn't want to harmonize. So he's got a lot of people trying to pull him, persuade him to go other ways, and I hope he keeps his mind on what he's doing. Because he knows in his heart what he wants to do, and if you could hear him sing, you know that he is one of a chosen few, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to.
He's a beautiful singer.
And I want to hear old Russell Woodard.
How Great Thou Art. He sang for his sister's wedding in Connecticut up there. His sister. Now, she's not a blood sister. She's a half sister to him.
Well, what help has he had on this?
There's been preachers and music teachers, and I don't know. He's had quite a bit of help. He's had voice. He studies voice, and 3 years ago I heard him sing, and he was real good then. You could tell he had a promise of singing then, and he's been studying hard for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
So now he's just great. I can't see where he may get a little tense and a little nervous while he's singing in parts of the song that he sang Sunday, but here he is in a new church, a new group, new people that he hasn't met before, and he's a little bit, I think, a little bit uptight about it, but he got up there and
talked to the crowd. Yeah, but that's how he can
yeah.
overcome.
But he really, when he started singing, that was it. It seemed like it disappeared.
Now he gonna come back this time?
They want to come at check. His stepdaddy told me Sunday when they were leaving.
And hear him again.
That he wants to come back and hear him again. So.
Yeah. Cheryl, let me tell you before we go out there. How's your, let me see, you know it's been so long, you've even forgotten about it. You told me that the melons you had came in a week early, and ordinarily that would make a man rich, but this year with the gas shortage, it was hard to move them.
Well, that's right. The truckers up north didn't want to venture down here to get melons and not be able to get gasoline to go back with. Their melons would rot.
Yeah.
So they were scared to try to make the trip. Then a few started making it.
Yeah.
they started venturing out to find the melons. They got down here, they got the gasoline, they went back. So a few more started coming. By the time they were all down here, we were out of melons. We had to sell because they wouldn't keep. And we were selling at 2 cents a pound because nobody else wanted them. Nobody was buying them. There wasn't enough market for them.
Yeah, I would have been getting a nickel a pound. That's right, season.
And as soon as we went out of the melons then, after we sold out at 2 cents a pound, the melons went up to 4 and 5 and 6 cents a pound.
Yeah.
So we missed the boat.
And
so all that hard work, we did make $1,000 and Freddie made $1,000.
But that isn't nothing.
It wasn't enough to worry with. I wouldn't have done that for $1,000. I have to worry with making all those phone calls. Well, that's not counting the phone calls. I mean, to tell you, we had a bill that would choke a horse there for that month, the telephone.
I told you this. I never realized what work there was in melons until Bill Wynn had melons in my back pasture. Why, he was coming and going all the time.
But he was taking them over here to the packing house, wasn't he?
Sold them right out there.
In the field?
They'd pick them, yes. He'd chuck them out of the field and they'd load them on the big trucks right out there.
But they'd weigh them over here at McIntosh?
I don't know where they weigh them.
Uh-huh. Well, see, we had to get on the telephone and contact the buyers. Then we had to direct them out here. Then they'd get a trucker after we'd direct them, and the trucker would get lost. We'd have to wait on the trucker to get here, and we'd have to stand by the telephone waiting for the trucker to call, direct him out here. Maybe he was a Polack, or maybe he was an Italian or something, and he couldn't understand English, but he would never get here. We'd wait and wait and wait and wait. One of them ended way up down in Bellevue. He's in Bellevue before he finally stopped and decided he was on the wrong track. He was in Ocala when we gave him the directions, and he ended up in Bellevue. So, and he was a Polish. He was an escapee from Poland. So he evidently didn't understand directions, but here he is driving a truck. So we ran into all kinds of problems, all kinds. And then when we did, we're making some money. Come to find out the broker that we were doing business with bought them from us for 2 cents a pound and turned around and sold them to some other guy before they even finished loading them in the trucks and left the place for 4 cents a pound.
Yeah.
So he was making money and he wasn't doing anything but making a couple phone calls.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. Well, that's what put vegetable people out of business, you know. Back
but in the last few truckloads, I decided, well, I was going to try something else. So rather than to go through this broker, I phoned a truck stop in Ocala, and I told them to put up on their bulletin board that we had watermelons for sale, and that they were going at a good price, they were dead, ripe, and ready to go. So he put that sign up on the bulletin board. We had more trucks coming out there at the house wanting watermelons.
Well, why didn't you think about that before?
I don't know. I'm new in this business. This is not my cup of tea, to tell you the truth, but I went along with it, and I decided I was going to cut that broker out. He yipped us out of so much money.
Good Lord.
So now I know how to go about it. So if he plants watermelons this year, I know where I'm going to go. I know what I'm going to do.
Good
I'm going
Lord.
To get the broker.
Good.
I'm going to be the broker.
You be the broker. Yeah. Well, Lord help us. Well, that's something. Well, let me tell you, Shirley, time you raise a crop, you put up with so much foolishness, getting help and keeping
yeah.
the implements going.
And I was keeping the pickers at the house, feeding them breakfast, dinner, and supper to get them to be there early enough in the next morning to get them down the field. Or either that, or I'd have to spend money, transportation, and gas going back and forth to Hawthorne, taking them home. It was cheaper for me to feed them, keep them there, and know that they were going to be there the next morning to get out in the field.
Never thought of that before. You never thought you'd be doing that?
No. If I'd known I was going to be doing it when they planted the melons, I wouldn't be doing it. I wouldn't have had that job. I tell you, I get into it no matter what goes on.
Yeah.
But now he's clearing that 40 acres of oaks over there, and I know he's going to put watermelons out there, and it'd be silly not to because it's new ground.
Yeah.
And they like watermelons to grow on new ground. And the melons, if we handle it right, could help pay for fencing and whatnot, you know, that 40 acres.
Yeah.
So
you are in the melon business in spite of yourself.
In spite of the whole works.
Yeah. Shelley, let me tell you, you've got so many programs. I talk like a not even. And they're all so exacting that you all get into. Lord help us, just one ordinary family, you see, would figure that that hay business you all do
yeah.
on top of whatever you're raising your family and your
but raising
job.
Five kids, this time the prices of food and the grocery stores. You go to the grocery store and you don't get a bag of groceries, only yay big for about $30. If you're lucky, you can carry it and you can carry it in the palm of your hand for $30 or $40.
Yeah.
So we got to do something. We got to keep these projects going because if we don't, if we fall short on one, we got to make it up on another. You know, something's we got to keep going. Keep rotating.
You don't know anything.
But, well, you know the expensive-sized children nowadays. Boy, Johnny's britches. He went to town and he bought 4 pair of pants and 3 or 4 shirts, and a pair of boots, a pair of shoes, and a pair of sneakers, and it cost me $93. Just like that, $93. And Bonnie, I let her go to town and pick out what she wanted. I'm not going to tell that child anymore. She's buying her own clothes. I decided that 2 years ago.
She can do
it. She has good, pretty good taste, but there are certain things that guidelines that I give her to go by, and I said, if you don't come back with decent looking clothes, I'm taking them back, and I'll buy what I want you to wear.
Yeah.
So she's pretty good about getting what I want her to wear.
Yeah.
But she went in, and it cost her $120-some to get outfitted for school.
Yeah.
Just for, you know, going back to school and going to church. So, and the three boys, I sit down in the catalog and I buy the cheapest and yet the best clothes that I can find for them. I buy 3 of this, 3 of that, 3 of the other.
Yeah.
That's the way I shop for them yet.
Yeah.
That's the way I used to shop for all of them.
Yeah.
But clothes is out of the question.
Do you have the penny catalog?
No, this is the only one I don't have. I have Alden, Spiegel's, Romans,
yeah.
Sears,
yeah.
And Montgomery Ward, and I don't have the pennies.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm just thinking they're the ones who have clothes,
mm-hmm.
is what people tell me, have always told me for a long time.
Well, they didn't, years and years and years ago, I didn't like their quality
yeah.
And their materials. I started buying with Alden's and Spiegel's. And what I couldn't find in Alden's, I could find in Spiegel's and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I'd check the prices. I'd get the catalogs down and check the materials, the quantity, and the quality of what I wanted, along with the prices from each of the individual catalogs. And the ones that were the cheapest, and I was buying the same thing in this, you know, for the cheaper price, that's what I bought. But I didn't always go for the cheapest price. It was a lot of the quality that I was looking for, whether it would last longer. Or
sure. Well, you know, those places, Penny's and all, one of my complaints is that the stuff they sell is too durable.
Hmm.
It's too heavy. But, Johnny wouldn't faze him what how heavy anything was. He just put it on where he'd go when
yeah,
he unconscious.
Yeah. Now his britches, he did get one pair of britches in this bunch that was quite heavy, and I wanted him to take them back, and he liked them very well, so I let him keep them. I must tell you about Johnny's girlfriend. He met a little girl last year, and he was very, very interested in her.
Yeah.
And,
she had animals, too.
No. No. This is another girl that he got interested in school. Local girl. And,
Where was the other girl from?
This other one was, one that he had met, Frances McGehee, was the one that he had met raising these steers.
Yeah,
you see.
Yeah.
She raised a steer, he raised pasture. He's known her a couple, 2-3 years, but they're so far apart, they don't get to see one another during the steer shows.
Oh, yeah,
so she lives way over in Trenton, or Newberry, over Newberry.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
But now this other girl is a local girl. She lives in Lockloosa. And he's known her from his Spanish class. See, he's crazy about Spanish. He's still making straight A's in Spanish and B in English. I thought it'd be the other way around. But anyhow, he met her in Spanish class. No, she's not in Spanish, but she went with the trip to St. Augustine, visiting points of interest as far as the Spanish class is concerned. And she went along for the trip. He's met her at school anyway.
Yeah.
And she graduated this past year, and Johnny was in the 10th grade. And she went to Johnny and asked him if he wouldn't take her to the school prom. So I told Johnny, I said, I think you're a bit young to be going to the school prom. But I said, well, if you want to go, all right. So he took her to the prom. He had already taken her out on a hayride, you know, and things like this over at the church. Through a hayride, and he got to know her there. She asked him to go to this. He's never asked her for a date. It's always been her.
Yeah.
So he's got to be quite friendly with her. So I've tried to check into the girl's background, find out more about her and everything. I didn't like what I was hearing, so I kind of discouraged the relationship between the two of them. But I went to see her one day, talked to her, to kind of cool it between the two of them, because he had more school to go, and she was graduated. She could go on about her work. She was going into nursing aid or something at the hospital. But I found out that at work, she would get sick and pass out. She'd be walking down the corridor and just pass out. She had something radically wrong, and I went to her and I told her to kind of cool it between her and Johnny, and she said she would, and she told me she'd been very sick, very ill, and she told me her symptoms, and I said you better go to a doctor, a very good doctor. I said, don't a girl, any girl 18 years old, just pass out like that. There's something wrong. So she said she was going to the hospital. To the doctor, and then the next thing I knew, she was in the hospital. And Johnny called to find out how she was doing and everything. She talked to him on the phone, and she gave him the number in the room that she was in, 4451. So we went to the hospital. Come to find out, she was in the psychiatric ward at the hospital. So I thought, well, this might cure him, you know, to kind of cool it between the two of them. But she had problems, and she had to work them out herself. She could, you know. So we went in there and talked with her. And this was Johnny's first experience in a psychiatric ward. And I mean to tell you, there were some children in there, girls in there, 13 to 16 years old, that had dope. And they were coming down from these trips, and it was just a wild mess in there. And Johnny says, I can't wait to get out of here. And I thought, well, maybe this would kind of, you know, cure him with his girlfriend for a while, because I want him to keep his mind on his subjects, his school. So when we left there, I asked him, I said, what do you think, Johnny, about Sharon? He says, well, he said, I think a lot of her. And he said, well, maybe she'll get straightened out. That's all it was said about it. But he hasn't wanted to go see her or call her since. so I don't know, maybe he's now. But I think that was quite an experience for a boy, a healthy boy like him, to be, you know, involved with a girl like this is not very, very healthy.
You don't know what it was.
Emotional. Well, she just gets sort of rational when you talk about her family and things like this. She gets, I think she's mentally unstable. And causes pain, stomach pains, and whatnot. She's all bunch of nerves.
Oh,
my. And Johnny just doesn't, he doesn't know what he could get into in that kind of a...
And he doesn't know anything, had any experience like that.
But she had other problems to go along with that. And Johnny was supposed to be the patsy for the whole thing, so I'm tickled to death that I found out.
Oh,
got him,
man.
Out of that.
Oh,
yeah. Out of that whole situation. But here she was wanting, and her family was trying to, or not her parents, but her brother and his wife and their children was trying to get him to go to the beach for a weekend.
Yeah.
That would have been the whole, that would have been the works right there.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't let him go. He wanted to go. We wouldn't let him go.
Shelley, where did Berman run into that bulldozer?
He'd been looking for years for a bulldozer.
Yes.
And he had it in his mind that if he ever found one, he'd get it.
Yes.
Well, somebody had told him about this bulldozer, and he went to look at it. He took me along to look at it. I wouldn't even get out of the car. It looked like a big piece of junk.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know anything about bulldozers.
I couldn't tell
whether it was upside down or not. So he said, all right. He said, I'll get somebody that knows bulldozers, if that'll satisfy you, and we'll go over this thing. He said, I think it's in pretty good shape. So, you know Joe Weaver?
Yeah.
In Citra?
Yeah.
Well, he went with Berman over there to look at it, and he said, boy, he said, buddy, if you don't buy this machine, I will. He said, all they use it for is pushing, it was in a dump area where they...
We're ready to go out and see the cows.
Where they shove their cans and whatnot down in a hole. And this is all that machine was used for. And an old dead tree, he had backed up against the operator had backed up against an old dead tree, and it fell down across the hood of the truck and kind of dented it in, and it rusted, and it looked bad. You know, it looked like it was an old piece of junk. But Berman said that... that he knew it was in good shape. The gears and everything was in good shape. The tracks was in good shape. So when Joe saw it, he looked at it. He first thought it was a pile of junk. Then he got down and he looked at it, rode it around a little bit, and he says, boy, if you don't buy this thing, I'll buy it. I want it. And when you get through with it, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
So Berman said, all right.
What do you know?
So he bought it.
What do you know?
But the only thing I don't like about it is that he doesn't have a cage over the top of it.
Yeah.
And I worry about that constantly.
Yeah, it's like using one of those power saws with a guard on it.
But he's got that 20 acres. He's going around the outside edge first where he can push up, you know, clear it away from all the fence, and he's working his way in toward the center.
Yeah.
I guess he's got a good third of it done.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. But he hasn't been on it now for a month because of the hay.
We go back
then.
Let's go.
Let
me get my boots on.
Okay.
Okay. I did get any boots.
I can't do that. I have to hold on to something.
I do too. She needed army boots like that.
Yeah. Those are nice.
Well, can he just stay on it as long as...
He'd stay on there from sun up to sundown if I didn't chase him off of it.
You mean, I thought they was hard on you.
They are hard, but he doesn't mind. As long as he's clearing ground, he'd stay on there if nobody'd bother him. He likes to get out there on a Saturday from the dawn to dusk, and he can't do
sure,
it.
Let
somebody
me tell
bothers
you,
him.
Those old oak trees out there, they aren't any good as timber, and he can't do anything with the ground of them on it because
they sap the ground and everything. You can't grow grass out there. And they're all falling apart anyhow. And people, and these ecology nuts gets out there and they pour water down his gas tanks and everything else trying to mess him up so he won't push up those trees. But they don't know that that we're paying taxes on that ground. We might as well go ahead and use it. The grass won't grow on the ground because of the shade of the trees. The trees are so old, the limbs are just falling out of the trees.
Now, what is that about the ecology?
Ecology nuts, that's what I call them. These people that don't want you to push up trees, you know, they'll get in there and they'll pour water down his gas tank and everything else if we don't watch him. He can't leave his bulldozer out there. He's got to go put it up under the shed. They already tried that once, and now he won't leave his bulldozer out there. He brings it home, puts it under the shed. Of course, he wants to take good care of it anyhow, but if he wanted to leave it out there a few hours, he couldn't do it. He has to bring it home. And they didn't only do his tractor that way, but those guys that we had in there salvaging what timber we could sell out of it, they poured water down his gas tank. He didn't know it, cranked it up, ruined the whole darn works. Had to have it all refixed. And he just bought the thing. Just bought the tractor before that all happened. I tell you, you can't trust people. The trees are pretty. I cry when I see them going down, but you just can't raise cattle. You can't raise anything out there for the trees.
Well, I'll tell you, nothing would please me so much as to get these, I've got a dozen of those huge oaks here. And
water oaks or live oaks?
I think a little of both.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them live oaks.
Yeah.
And
well, he's going to leave a lot of the live oaks there. They're pretty, and they won't, the limbs won't break out. They do give the cows shade.
Yeah.
He's going to leave some of them there. He's not going to leave them all there. The prettiest shaped ones.
Well, but you don't want the big ones, Shirley.
No, the ones that spread way out and take
yeah.
in an acre or so of ground,
yeah.
a couple acres of ground, those are the ones, if he can't, you know, find the ones that sort of tapered, you know, grow up from the trunk and then out, rather than the squatty ones, and then they branch out, you know. Those are the ones he wants to try to get rid of.
Those big ones, they just, I didn't realize it. I used to feel like the ecology nuts, too.
I did, too.
I never put gas in anybody's radiator.
Well, they do that to stop them, you see, so you won't push it
up. But I felt like doing it, you see. I see that done. And then I, at long last, I come to realize that a tree matures and needs to be taken out.
Yeah.
And the trigger of the whole thing is to let new ones come in.
Yeah.
If you want forests, if you want trees, you want some new
that's
ones.
That's it. I like the new, the younger trees because they're not so easily struck by lightning, and the limbs aren't so weak that they might fall on a cow during a windstorm, you know.
Yeah.
I'm always afraid of that. But and the real tall trees are the ones.
Shirley, that clover business, that clover hay, I have not seen any. I'm ready to go. I haven't seen any clover hay that was worth putting up. I haven't seen any that anybody has raised.
We've got a field over there that's the prettiest you ever saw.
That's what you said last year. You bought me a bunch of
straw.
It wasn't even straw, it was sticks.
Is that right?
You can't even sit on it. It'll go through your
was
fingers.
That cut with a rotary or
I don't know what it's cut with, but I'm not talking about yours. I'm talking about just in general.
Mm-hmm.